Hey, home theater friends. Thanks for pushing play on the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast, the podcast that's all about the experiences, the sights, the sounds, the scenes, all the fun that we have in our theater. Today, I can't wait. I'm sitting down with Michael Scott from AV Nirvana. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. This guy has reviewed so many movies. Check him out. All his links are down in the show notes, but I've linked directly to his 4K catalog, his digital catalog. I can't wait to ask him what he thinks of the differences between physical and digital, the experience and stuff, all the fun stuff that we do in our theater. This guy, he breaks it down so well. I can't wait to talk to him. I'm expecting this to go a long time, but I'm really looking forward to that physical digital conversation. So I'm very excited. There'll be more afterwards. I can't wait to get in there. Let's get in there.
This is Bright Side Home Theater.
Hey, Mike, how are we doing?
Good, good. How are you doing, DJ?
I'm doing good, good. Welcome to Brightside Home Theater. Excited to have you here. Todd tells me great things about you, says you know tons and tons about movies, so I'm very excited for this.
Nice. He probably over-exaggerates just a tad, but I do like to have fun with movies.
I've read your stuff, and if for everybody listening, I know you heard it in the open, but this is Michael Scott from AV Nirvana, and he does their movie reviews, their Blu-ray reviews, their 4K reviews, all of that fun stuff. Digital reviews, that's a little bit less. We're going to get into that. But, you have an extensive list, and the list of all his stuff is in the show notes, the catalog of 4K movie reviews, Blu-ray reviews, and like I said, the digital reviews. That'll all be in the show notes, so definitely check those out. But when just go into that, clicking on that link and seeing your catalog, for instance, of your 4K movie reviews, it's huge. How did you get into this, and what made you? I mean, it's amazing what you're writing for each movie.
It was pure luck that I even got into this position. Like, I remember when I was back on Home Theater Shack, which is basically kind of what AV Nirvana was back in the day before it got sold. Sonny Parker had sent out basically a casting call, in a sense, for a new reviewer. Their main reviewer was having to step down, and they needed an extra spot. So I just said, yeah, I'd finished writing up a review just for boredom the other day. So I just tweaked it, sent it in, said, yeah, nothing will ever come of this. And boom, then it happened. Then the other guy had to step down. I had to take his place, and then it just snowballed from there, basically.
Wow. Well, so how did you get into just reviewing? Like, what's your basis of movies? I see it in some of your reviews, and like, you're younger than I am, but you, like, you saw, like, you
yeah, just turned 40 this week.
Okay, so I'm 51. Awesome, congratulations.
You don't look 50, so we'll say that's good.
It's the camera. You should have seen me in makeup before we got on here. So, but thank you. But anyways, but yeah, so you a lot of your reviews, you say like, oh, I remember going back and seeing this in the theater either as a kid or whatever. So clearly your love of movies. But then to get into like how you break them down, because you break them down for everything. You do your Siskel and Ebert of the movie itself. But then you also get into what I love, and that's the home theater experience, the picture quality, the sound quality. And you really break it down to the nitty gritty. You get it. Some of your reviews you've gone into like how low the bass goes. And you'll be like, oh yeah, you get down to that 10, you know, decibel level and stuff like that. And it's insane. Awesome stuff. So how did you get into all that?
That was basically, I cut my teeth at AVS back in the day, before the format wars. And I'm an obsessive tech nerd to begin with, so I started building my own speakers. All the speakers that I use for my setup right now are DIY Sound Group speakers. I don't know whether you've seen them in the DIY group of AVS, but I've used Volt 10s as my surrounds, and the Cheap Thrills is my main. They're basically 15-inch SEOS drivers.
Oh, wow.
Very dynamic. You can pretty much run them off of a paperclip, and they'll hit 150 decibels or whatever.
Wow.
That's slightly exaggerated, but yeah. they'll hit ear-breaking levels.
Oh, wow.
And I built my own subs back in the day. I went from Bill Fitzmaurice's THTs. I was actually one of the originators of the Marty sub. The original Marty sub was I helped LTDO2 build them and design them for a guy named Marty. That's how they were named.
Yeah.
And right now I'm using dual SVS PB3000s. Simply because I moved to a new place, those Marty subs just don't fit. They're 16 cubic foot monsters.
Oh, wow.
And that just does not fit in a smaller home theater room.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but even the SVS subs, they're not tiny either, though.
Oh, no. They're still pretty hefty. The PB3000s, like, I'm running a 12 by 14 room, so it's not the biggest room. And dual PB3000s in there, I have to dial them back. They hit hard.
Wouldn't I mean, okay, so let's have some fun. I'm in an 11 by 18 room, and I'm running dual PB2000s. And I'm dialing those way back. So what made you go to the 3000s?
I'm a big fan of overkill is overrated. And plus, there's the PB3000s are known for having a little bit more of that mid-bass crunch.
Oh, okay.
A little bit that mid-bass thump that is a little bit amplified.
Okay.
And I'm a huge fan for that mid-bass shotgun to the chest feeling.
Right.
I like to watch a lot of action, a lot of horror, and that tends to just hit you right in the chest.
Yes, and it's so funny you say that, because that's the answer that I was suspecting that I would get, because in this room, I could have got away with PB1000s.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But I knew the 2000s had that lower extension, and I just always wanted to get sub, 20 hertz.
I wanted
to get down under that, and the 2000s... supposedly they go, I've never put meters on any of this stuff or anything. I'm just, whatever. But all the reviews and their own literature tells you that they get down to, 15, 16. In the right situation, could be 14,
yeah,
13.
With room gain. Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, oh, well, that's what I want. I at least want to know that I'm capable of that. Whether I'm actually getting it or not, I don't know. But it's like you said, for the 3000, I knew there was a sonic reason that you wanted to experience. Because it's very rarely is it just like, well, I just like to have overkill. It's like,
yeah.
But there's usually a slight benefit to it as well.
I was waffling back and forth between the PowerSound Audio's TV-1512s too. And those have a massive amount of chest bump in the middle from what I've heard. It's just, I got too good of a deal on the SVSs and it's...
Yeah. Yeah. That's where all the... With all the talk that everybody has about, Atmos, overheads, and the stuff moving around the room, where the fun, I think, really is with the subwoofers.
I have to admit, I love all of the home theater, and I understand about balance, but there's just something geeky, nerdy of listening to some action movie, and you just hear that shotgun blast to the chest when somebody breaks through a wall of glass, or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Howitzer like feeling when guns are going off.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's so funny. I was just doing reliving a scene I recorded last week or a couple weeks ago. So I did District 9 probably a year ago, right? Yeah. Great movie. And there's this scene at I think it's 12 minutes and 15 seconds. And it's when they're in the back of one of those personnel carriers. And when they,
oh God, I know exactly the scene you're in, that big just drops from the bottom and just hit comes up.
Right, because they shut off the personnel carrier. And the engine just goes boom, boom, boom.
And you just hear that thud.
But you feel it.
It's
like you're in a vehicle and you're in like when you're sitting in a vehicle, if you've ever shut off a big truck, you get that
boom, boom, boom,
and you feel, I felt it. And the first time I experienced it, I was like, I had to run upstairs and get my wife, have her come down, listen to it. And then my son come home from work. I'm like, you got to come down and listen to this. And it's just that it's a feel. It's not just audible. And what was funny is I went to review this scene. And just recently, like I said, a week or so ago, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, where did it go? I'm listening and I'm like, what the hell? I get up, go to my media closet, and I look, and I'm like, the RCA jack for my subs had just popped
wiggled
out.
Loose.
Just wiggled loose enough that I wasn't getting any subs. All I was getting was my mains. Every, my main, all my other speakers were working. and I could hear bass. I could hear what it was going to do, but there was no feel. As soon as I put those subs back on, I was like, oh my God, I'm like the surround and everything. And it's like, that's what I'm talking about. I'm like, it was still a fun scene without that. But once you plug that back in.
The one that really sticks in my memory is Interstellar, as they're going through that black hole near the end. My goodness gracious. I remember the dual Martys I had. Those are 18-inch drivers running about 850 watts apiece. Yeah. I drove, like, I could hear my back wall vibrating and my wife coming out of the room going, what is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because I think in your review of that, that's one of the ones where you mentioned the 10 hertz. It gets down like that.
Oh, yeah, Interstellar gets real low.
Gets real low. And it's... Yeah.
That and, what was it, The Dark Knight Rises?
The third one?
It's the scene where Bruce comes up with the Batmobile, the Batplane out of the alley.
Yes.
There's an oscillating down to, I believe, 10 to 12 hertz right there. And if you've got something that goes down low, you can actually feel the hairs on your arms rise up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That and I like that. And when you feel your pant legs move, like you're sitting there and you're like, because it's just the pressure and you're just
the Godzilla impact.
Yes. Oh, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't know. And that's not fair. And it's not fair to the other experiences that we get with the surround sounds and the overheads and stuff. I think we kind of take that for granted.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I don't know. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to do. I mean, to install your overheads, to do your whole thing, to have a surround sound system is amazing. But then to just go that extra level and have a good set of subs and just to take that to another level. I'm like, I don't know why. I say that's where the fun is, but it's the entire experience, obviously.
And it really is also one of those, it's a complete full course meal too. Sometimes I'll listen to a track and go, oh, I just love the way this is kicking me in the teeth. And other times I'm just like, this is the most nuanced mix I have ever heard.
Yeah.
I mean, just the way it shifts directionality, something going over your head.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You get to I'll do scenes and I'll be like, you're going to want to listen to this one probably 3 or 4 times over and over because, all right, first off, listen on the left side of the room because something's coming down, but pay attention on this side of the room. What did one I do recently that, Tenet, which you didn't really like the movie.
I've watched it 4 times now and I still think that, what's his name? Director. Nolan. Got a little too up in his own, sniffing his own farts in a way, I guess you could say. It's like, he was one of those ones you could tell he's the one who gets it and a lot of people are going, okay.
I think he's just trying between that and the dream one.
Interstellar. Sorry, not Interstellar. Inception.
Inception. Yeah, eyes, whatever. Inception. I think he's just trying to screw with the audience and make them be like honestly, like on his deathbed, he'll be like, "Yeah, Tenet meant nothing." I was just screwing with everybody.
That was the one that I felt was the most obtuse of his films. After a while, I started getting some of the subtext, but I still felt it just wasn't as easily graspable.
No.
Its benefits and its downsides. Some people really love that, and I have nothing against them loving it.
Right.
Some people don't.
That's me. I love it. I love the idea because, one, I think there's a ton for the home theater experience. I think there's a ton of stuff in that to take in, and it is fun to watch and analyze. But then while you're doing that, you also are like, now what's going on in the story here? What time period are we in? Who's going where? And all of this stuff. But for anybody that hasn't seen it, I don't want to get into spoilers, but there's this scene.
That movie is one giant spoiler.
it's a giant spoiler, right? But if you know the movie, which you know the movie, so you'll get this reference, but it's early on. It's when they... protagonist, I think. His name is in the movie, right? So they have him, he's strapped to a chair in between train tracks.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And there's a meaning to that because there's a train on one side of the room going in one direction and there's a train on the other side of the room going in the other direction. And during that entire scene, when they have the camera fixated, like, where the trains are on either side, you can hear the trains traveling down each side of your room in the opposite directions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's an amazing effect to be sitting in the middle of your room and have something go from, you know, right rear to front rear, and then on the other side go from left front to left rear, and you're. But that's one of those things on first viewing, maybe even second viewing.
Took me the really, third viewing to catch that.
Yeah, you don't notice it because you're like, there's a lot going on, especially on the first viewing. You're like, what's going on here? Why are they doing this to him? Blah, blah. But then when you're sitting there and you're like, wait a minute, this crap going on in my room is crazy. And then when the camera shifts to looking at the trains going across the screen, we got that pan going too. You know, and it's, I know, and you even said in your review of that one, like Nolan just doesn't do Atmos.
No, he is very, very adamant about keeping it old school in terms of, he doesn't like Atmos for everything. And I don't think I've ever seen him do an Atmos film, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, as I was mentioning in my review of Looper the other day, Rian Johnson is ridiculously adamant against HDR. So Looper is basically HDR, SDR in an HDR package. Because he doesn't like to post-process like that.
Huh. I didn't know that about Rian Johnson, that he doesn't like HDR. Wow.
That's one of the reasons, what was it, The Last Jedi tends to look a little flatter than...
Oh, really?
The previous and the sequel. Like I said, it's not big and it doesn't look bad. It's just he's not really into the HDR craze.
Right. Craze. I feel like that to me feels a little different. Maybe you could explain it better to me, but I feel like that's a little different than Atmos to 5.1. Because for me, Atmos to 5.1 is, it really is what is the artist doing with the tool.
Correct.
Right, Atmos is just a different way to mix a track, right? Yeah. But you can still hit all the same levels. You can still do all of the same stuff with 5.1.
Oh yeah.
So that
adds a little more nuance to it.
Yeah, atmospheric. It actually, to me, it's always felt like it makes it easier for the artist going to object based. You can.
Oh, it does.
You know, like when you see what they do in the studio and how they can mix the sound, and it's more a point of reference. I want the sound to sound like it's coming from here.
Yeah.
Then the system just does it, right? Yeah. Whereas with 5.1, you have to know, I'm sure the computers are doing stuff too, but you're mixing stuff around the room. It's a little bit different, but the end product could be pretty much exactly the same. And then add into the fact that we all upmix everything anyways. Right. So then what do you got? Now going to HDR, I feel like that's adding another depth to the picture. Am I
in a way it is.
In that?
Like I said, I am perfectly here. Let me see if I can word this properly. My only complaint about HDR is sometimes it can be applied to older movies in a way the director may not have originally wanted. I don't mind when a director comes back and says it personally supervises the transfer of the HDR application. It's just that every once in a while, I've seen a few films. I can't think of one off the top of my head. Oh, yes. Clint Eastwood, his big famous Western.
Oh, Unforgiven.
Unforgiven. Yeah. The HDR on that was a little wonky.
Okay.
I just wasn't really wild. But like I said, it's like everything, it's application, how it's applied.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I mean. But I feel like there's an added benefit to HDR where Atmos is more of ease of use for the artist on the other
end. At least that's how I would interpret it.
Okay, good. So I'm not far off then. Okay.
The one thing that I love about HDR, though, is the black levels. Black levels have been such a problem on Blu-ray. Color banding or black crush is something I notice in basically every Blu-ray because my eye gets drawn to it. HDR tends to eliminate that for the most part, if done properly, of course.
Yes. And you're able to have that black level at the same time you're getting the brighter brights, which at the same time, if you can get something bright on the screen and your irises open up, that makes your black levels better. I mean, it's everything is in conjunction, you know, you're like, oh, okay, I could see this and this because black levels, actually, I'm sorry, your irises close. On when you get that bright spot on the screen, right? Yeah. So where you have a completely dark screen, that's really hard to replicate because your eyes are opening up. you know, and now you're going to take in more. So your black levels are going to appear to be a little bit less, especially in a projection system, obviously in an OLED or something like that, where you have nice black. I mean, it can just shut everything off and you just get that black level, right? But in real life, when you go out at night, right, you can step out, everything's like pitch black. You can't see. But then as your eyes open up, everything isn't pitch black anymore. You start to take in more light. You get
the ambient light
bit
from the stars.
Things are reflecting. And it's a little bit different of a feel. And they can do that. The artists can do that, again, in the movies. One of the things I noticed, I felt like this is what something Netflix was really good at doing with being, even though they're streaming, they would always, it seemed like they just knew how to shoot HDR for streaming because they had, their shots were shot like that to get you to that comparison where you'd have a bright scene and then a dark scene. So it just really came off as, especially early on, they seemed to have some of the best HDR out there for streaming anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still remember Disney Plus is coming on the market and getting frustrated out the neck because their HDR/Dolby Vision implementation was horrible when they first came out, the app, and they had to slowly tweak it.
So how much of that do you think was their actual their implementation, and how much is it that they were probably just literally just being overrun by everybody downloading and streaming?
No clue. Honestly, no clue. I just know it was a common complaint, and that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And then we watched it improve over months.
Right.
It could possibly have been bandwidth limitations. It could have been a million different things. I just didn't have tools to test if what my bit rate was, etc.
Right. Right. And it's like I can't remember. I can't remember the movie. I might not even have been that Disney Plus platform, but I had listeners telling me about one stream something, especially during COVID. This pandemic really tested the limits of our streaming, which I think
everybody was online because we're stuck at home.
Right. And you had some countries and areas of the world, they were throttling back and they were limiting it so that everybody could at least get something. And
yeah,
there was a lot of, I think we learned a lot about streaming during that period of time that pays dividends in the years to come. But I remember, I don't remember, like I said, I don't remember what particular movie it was, but something came out on streaming and different people were saying it was great and other people were saying it was awful. And there were all these weird quirks about it that it was like, you started to notice, like, it was like, this can't be possible. We can't all be like either blind or great eyesight, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's literally limitations. Could be your neighborhood, could be your area of the world. There's just so many.
There's so many factors with streaming. Yeah. That's why whenever I do a digital review, I always like to be very cautious describing things. Oh, this is a 4-star stream. This is a 5-star stream. Just because the next person may not have the bit rate to capitalize on that.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes I don't. Like, I've noticed pixelation. I'm going, my internet's going wonky, aren't I? Pull up my stream test. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I've done the same thing. It's like I have the I installed a Lumigen because of the TV show Foundation. And I don't know if you ever watched that show.
But I have not yet.
Oof, some of the best HDR that I've ever seen.
Which and platform is it?
That's on Apple TV Plus.
Okay.
And they have some of the best content out there. I know they're from people like yourself that really get into bit rates and all that stuff. They said that they fly at some of the highest bit rates of all streamers because they're trying to promote their product. They're trying to promote Apple TVs. They're trying to promote all this. So
I have heard Apple TVs are bandwidth hogs.
Yeah. They have great. Their content is so good.
And I haven't utilized the service yet, but I have like everything but Apple TV. It's funny.
They have some great stuff on there.
Yeah. I've been wanting to check out Ted Lasso. So that's kind of one of my, all right, I need to start at least getting a couple month subscription to see how I like it.
Yeah, Ted Lasso is really, really good. There's really, as far as production quality goes, my buddy and I always say, we're like, there's nobody better. The more consistent their production quality, you might not like the actual piece of content, like it might not be your particular genre or movie or whatever, but you can't deny that the production is just first rate. It's nice. Like movie theater quality. And like even the morning show, really good. My wife and I love that one. But I mean, all of the shows on there, Foundation, For All Mankind, space one, that's a series. It's two seasons. Third should be coming out soon, but the production quality is so good. C with Jason Momoa.
That I want to see. That looked really interesting.
Oh, it is so
I'm not good. A huge big Momoa fan because I always like to say he plays the same bro every movie, but that he one actually looked really interesting.
Yeah, he kind of is in this one too, but this one, it is so good. And the opening credit scenes are just for, like, they're HDR porn. It's the way they move on C, on For All Mankind, a lot of the even Foundation for all these shows. Those opening scenes are just they're awesome. What kind of display are you running?
My main display is a Sony X950H, the 85-incher.
Ooh.
I used to have a projector, but I got rid of that just because when we moved this last year, it just didn't fit in the situation. So I just went with a smaller theater room, but a much larger 4K TV.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how far away are you sitting from that in a smaller room? Must be huge anyway.
9 feet.
Oh, God. Yeah, so you're really not losing anything.
No. In my opinion, that's the 9 to 12 feet is that, nine to 11 feet is that perfect sweet spot for an 85-incher. If you're looking for that massively theatrical immersive experience. I mean, right. Some people just want to sit back and, you know, just watch TV.
Yeah, I don't, I have recliners in here, but I never, when I'm watching a movie, I never recline. I never, because I want to be sitting, I want my ears up where they're right with, that's yep. where the speakers are supposed to be. Everything's there. And I always watch like just sitting up, and I am probably about 10 and a half. I'll scooch a little forward. If it's an IMAX movie, I'll move the chairs up a bit, but from 110 inch. So, but 85 inch on a, you know, on that kind of a TV. Oof. Awesome.
Yeah. Before that, I was running the JVC RS46 and 120 inch Draper Cineperm screen. And that was huge.
Oh yeah. And how far were you from that? Probably my distance, right?
12 feet.
12 feet. Yeah. Not. Yeah. Mm, okay. This. As opposed to this?
Yeah, pretty much. And it was great. It's just,
yeah.
I didn't want to jump to the 4K projectors at that point because the wallet hurt just looking at some of those back then.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's tough.
I mean, today, they're, what, $8,000 for the one I want.
Right. Yeah, I'm running the Sony 295, which is the entry-level 4K from Sony. Back when it was, and that was five, but then adding, as my listeners know, adding the Lumigen, I get everything that you would get on an OLED. Obviously my black levels aren't there, but I'm still getting the gradations. I'm still getting everything. It's actually brightened a lot of my scenes, brightened my brighters, because it's giving you everything. And, you know, doing a grayscale off of a, you know, test disc or something. I mean, the grayscale I'm seeing is just fantastic. So that's added a lot to having the projector, even the entry level one. But it's a lot of fun. That was a huge upgrade for me. Huge upgrade. But streaming versus physical. Now you've said that, and it's like I said, it's like your digital reviews are a lot less. And we talked about that. A little bit, but do you have any favorite streaming platforms?
Platforms?
Yeah, like anything.
I tend to be a whore when it comes to that. I have equal opportunity. I like, I have to say that for just mindless, when I want to zone out and just, you know, disconnect my brain, it's always Hulu. There's some older TV show that I'm, you know, rewatching. I just kind of want to zone out to Bones or, you know, Castle or something like that. But if I'm going for more modern stuff, I'm probably going to go with either Netflix or HBO Max.
Oh, nice. Yeah, HBO Max. HBO Max is kind of down there for me on picture quality and sound quality.
That I'm going to agree with. The picture quality has never been the best. For video quality, I'm still going to go with Netflix. I think they fine-tuned it the best out of the ones I have. I have not tried Apple TV or Apple Plus, as you mentioned, so I can't compare. But out of the main ones, I go to Netflix more often if I'm looking for something really pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Netflix, like I said, I think it almost feels like there's a mandate on how they need to film stuff. Like when they sign people up for things, and they had some of the best audio too with Six Underground. They have some demos type audio.
They were one of the first to implement Atmos into most of their stuff.
Were they not the first? I'm pretty
sure they were. I just don't want to, say definitively. Yeah.
Amazon tried, and it was a disaster.
It was, oh my gosh.
Trying to get it, like, oh, you got to buy this one, but then you got to click on this, and then you got to... I bought so many Amazon Fire Stick versions trying to figure out how to get it, and it was aggravating.
Excuse me.
And it was...
Yeah.
Even with Prime now, I find Prime... Amazon Prime is probably, to me, the worst.
I have to agree. They're the ones I visit the least.
Yeah.
I mean, don't worry. They still got some good stuff, and I think their HDR implementation has gotten a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah.
But they're just... They always feel slapdash to me. It's just the best way of describing it.
Yeah.
They're half there, but half not.
Like, I just finished watching Reacher a couple of weeks ago.
Actually, I just finished that 2 days ago.
And I felt like the picture in that, there were times when it looked fantastic, and then there were other times where it was just so bad.
It was so flat. There were times where I'm just looking at this is very flat. It's looking very two-dimensional.
And do you know the scene? It's a later episode of the series when he's driving in the car, and I was amazed by the fact that, when they wear space helmets in movies, they put lights in the helmet solely for the purpose of shooting the scene, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you're in space and you have a light inside your helmet, it's harder to see out of the helmet. So that those lights inside helmets are just for us to see their faces. Here we are, Reacher's driving down the road. He's got one hand on the wheel. The camera's situated somewhere in the glove box, looking up at him, and he's only lit by the dashboard lights.
Yep, I saw that scene. I know which one you're talking about.
And it was horrible.
I'm not sure whether that was intentional or whether it was just crappy implementation. How do you
not know? Every video podcaster out there knows, well, you need lighting a little bit. You know, people...
Yeah.
How many of those rings are being sold to people that have no idea what they're doing, right?
The only reason I give that as a caveat is you never know some weird director's intent who's like, I'm going to do this crazy thing because I like it.
Right, but at least nail it, right?
Yeah.
Don't. It's like
it was a very awkward shot, very shadowed. You barely saw features. That was about it.
Right. It was flat, but it was like his face was. You could see the color on his, like the colors of the dash were like pixelating on his face.
There was some bad pixelation in that scene. I noticed some distinct artifacting.
Oh, it was but that's what I'm saying. There were. All throughout that thing, like they go from one scene. There was another scene where, you know how like for depth of field, they'll focus on a character and then the one that's in the background will be out of focus. And then when that character
will be in focus, yeah.
And then they'll swap it.
Yeah.
They were doing that, but I don't think they were doing it the right on purpose because the wrong character was out of focus at times. And then it was like the whole left side of the screen was... And I'm like, this can't... I actually came back to it days later to see if it was my stream. And I'm like, nope, that was it.
Oh,
it's okay. But I just find them to be the most inconsistent as far as... The Wheel of Time is another one. I'm watching that. And that has some really nice HDR, some nice colors.
Is it finished yet?
I think that one did finish. I haven't finished it personally.
Okay, because I was waiting so I could binge watch it because... One of the things that drives me nuts is, one, two, three, four episodes. And, oh, crap, there's two more.
Yeah, yeah.
I did that with Peacemaker. I was like, oh, I think it's finished. Six episodes, just like the Disney Plus. No, it's got eight.
But yeah.
2 weeks later, I can finish.
There you go. But Peacemaker, I thought, came out really good.
I was surprised by that series. I enjoyed the living heck out of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I think everybody was. But that's James Gunn, right? He takes stuff.
I was laughing myself silly. And plus, I'm also the person who's into that, like, Euro glam metal stuff. So Wigwam opening soundtrack, all that stuff.
Did you know that song before the show?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
I've been listening to Wigwam for 20 years. They're, I believe, Danish or Finnish or Swedish. I can't remember which one. They're one of those, Slavic countries.
That's awesome.
That whole area has just revitalized glam metal from the 80s.
That's awesome. That's yeah, I didn't know that. I know a lot of it was metal. I recognize a lot of the songs growing up in the 80s.
Oh yeah.
But that one I'd never heard before. And or maybe I did, but not
they're post 2000.
Yeah, so yeah, I was off to other things by then. But the first time you saw that opening scene in episode one,
I laughed myself silly.
I was like, what the hell is this? But then it's like the new craze. It's
like, oh yeah.
It's amazing. It's and such well,
Cena was
show.
Great. Yeah, I was really surprised that I actually loved to hate Robert Patrick so much.
I know. I know. I love Robert Patrick. I loved him. And I just was at a Boston Expo or Comic Expo, what do they call it? Comic-Con in Boston, yeah. Right? And he was there. Oh. And my son and I were standing there, and he didn't have a very big line. And plus, this was in August, so it was still you got some COVID residue of people not wanting to go out and stuff. But I was like, oh, why didn't we? I go to these cons and stuff, and I never do the research. I just go to have fun. People watch, walk around, and look, and maybe buy a few things. And my son's like, we should have brought the Laserdisc. We should have brought this stuff. The Terminator 2 and all that stuff. I'm like, it would have been great just to walk up and say hi to him and get an autograph. But
my wife is huge into cons. She runs the ones in Tucson here, or helps run them. As security.
Oh, really?
She runs security for a couple, and she's handler for the Stars for a few of the others. Okay. I'm the, please get me away from too many people, start hugging myself in a corner.
Well, that's how I am, period, with people. And it's like,
yeah, that's exactly the...
This whole podcasting thing and going out and talking to people, that's new for me. Like I said, I'm 51 years old, and then it's like, all right, I'll try a new thing in my life. I was 47 when I started, 48 when I started podcasting, but I'm like,
yeah,
I'm going to talk to people.
I always joke that I am the little nerd in the basement who's happy in his little kingdom type thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's why I built a theater in my basement. I'm like, I just want to go down there. And like COVID was like my wheelhouse. Oh, stay home. Okay.
Yeah, as the old joke say, you realize how much of an introvert you are when COVID doesn't change your lifestyle at all.
Exactly. I was like, all right, you're gonna make me stay home, which is where I wanted to be in the first place.
Ah, darn it.
Ah, okay. All right.
Twist my arm.
Yep. But yeah, Robert Patrick in that. Name the adjective. He's just awful. An awful person. And
it was one of those ones you were just kind of got a kick out of listening to him be an idiot. And then you're sitting there going, oh, you really are that much of a piece of expletive. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
It was so great. And I'm looking for, I think the way they wrote the show, there's a season two coming, and he'll be in that. I think the way that they've left it open, he'll be able to be in that as well.
Whether he died or not. Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Because he's technically in his mind now, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I mean, it's which I think is great.
I'm sorry, that last scene where you just see him kind of this twisted laugh as they fade off into the sunset. I'm like, oh my gosh, Robert Patrick just nailed that evil, sleazy, he knows he's in his mind type of thing.
Yeah. I love him and everything. I liked him in Scorpion. Did you ever watch that show, Scorpion, the geniuses?
No, I did not. I unfortunately did not.
So he was kind of like their handler in that. He was the FBI guy in that, handling the Team Scorpion, which was a bunch of geniuses that just went around and saved the world in different situations.
I remember seeing the trailer for it when I was online one time, but I just, one of those things, oh, I'll watch that later. 5 years later, you still haven't watched it.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and I enjoyed it. It got a little bit weird at the end, but it was kind of fun watching these. They were all basically a bunch of Sheldons, like from Big Bang Theory, that like they just can't handle being around people. They don't know how to, deal, except for they did have one genius guy that was really good at knowing, like he was a psychiatrist type genius. So he knew how everybody worked. He was a doctor. He knew how their bodies worked and stuff. So that was his expertise. So Robert Patrick did that.
I mean, everybody knows Terminator too. I mean,
he's
iconic,
Yeah. I've seen is like he's done YouTube videos with people, with podcasters and stuff. And I remember one where he went and relived some of the scenes that they shot where down in the Riverway, the LA Riverway and stuff. And he was talking about those. But yeah, he seems like a great guy. It's, when you see him in these things, he's definitely not that character in Peacemaker.
No, my wife says he's very personable because she's met him at some of the cons.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah, so I'm hoping to be able to get them back and maybe do my research next time and actually bring something in and get to meet them or something. But I didn't want to just go up and go, hi. I just wanted to say hi.
That's probably something that I would end up doing. I'd be like stuttering, people, words.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing is you can eat an icebreaker. I have a laser disc. You want to sign that?
There's like, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so you're talking about, you mentioned earlier about Looper.
Yeah.
I read that. That's one of your more recent reviews.
Correct. About a week ago at most.
What's that?
I think that was about a week ago at most.
Yeah. Yeah. And I haven't seen that movie in a few years. And it's funny because you opened up the review with like, it's been 10 years already. And
yeah. I remember seeing it in theaters. Visibly remember the friends I went with, what we thought when we saw it. I'm like, wow, it's been no, I'm not getting that old.
Yeah, I know. And I love that movie. I love time travel movies.
I really enjoyed the tar of it. The only thing I have a problem with, I thought the kid was the creepiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like every time I see it, I'm like, oh my God, are we watching a horror movie now?
Yeah. Yeah. But it was funny. You said something in your review of it, and I was laughing about it. And it's like, it's that now Looper. You said in 2044, I think is
2044. I believe is the present. Yeah,
yeah. So time travel hadn't been invented, right? And I don't know why, but reading your review, it struck me because Lord knows we've talked. In our lives, we've talked time travel over and over. But Terminator 2, going back.
That's a classic sci-fi trope since at least the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah, at least. And so when you say it hasn't been invented yet, doesn't that mean, like, when time travel, do we invent time travel or do we discover it? Because once it's invented, doesn't that mean now exists in 2044?
Yeah, I know. I'm going to say that's a direct quote from the movie, though, the way I phrased it.
Right.
It was more of a quote from the movie. But yeah, it's one of those things of the paradox. We'll just,
yeah.
That's the one thing, the only thing that drives me nuts about time travel movies is there's always paradoxes that my logical brain goes, you know, I don't know if you thought that through, you know, type thing.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, if time travel's possible, then it already exists. We just don't know it yet, right? It's
then
like
it
saying,
comes into the million theories of can you alter the past? Can you not alter the past? You know,
right? Yeah. Then you get into
then technically it wouldn't exist because if you can't alter the past, you can't have it affected and all those sorts of fun stuff.
Right. So that's always been my argument. Like my son and I get it. He's an engineer. He loves to talk this stuff. When he was in school, he had professors that were like Sheldon from Big Bang. They just and they talk all this stuff. And we talk time travel, and my go-to argument is it doesn't exist. And he goes, no, we could figure it out. If we could figure it out, we would have, and we'd know.
The one thing that I really appreciated about Looper is that Rian Johnson had a handle on the paradoxes. I mentioned it in the review, but there's that one thing where they're sitting across from each other at the diner where they meet for the first time. And he starts to ask a question about the future, and he goes, no, stop it.
Right.
And you can just tell that's a wink and the nod. We're not even going to bother playing with paradoxes because it just ticks people off.
Right.
We have the rules of the movie. Stick to those.
Stick to those. And it's funny because, like, I mean, we've seen it in we saw it in Endgame when they did. They mentioned all the different paradoxes from all the different movies, and then they created their own, which I thought was great. Because they're like, they actually said in the movie that these paradoxes, all of the, you know, the Back to the Future, this and that, the time, they said those don't matter. This is how it really happens. So then they go invent their own paradox in their movie, you know? So it's like kind of making fun of the movie paradoxes and then going and adding another one to it.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. All type of fun. Let's get into this, the physical discs. That's your wheelhouse.
That's my wheelhouse, and I'm the rabid, I feel like I don't own anything if it's not physical. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoy streaming for what it is, but it just does not have the same appeal to me, the same texture, the same feel. I don't feel compelled to watch a movie when it's streaming. I'll sit there and go, I need to see that. A year later, I haven't bothered. If it's a physical disc, I'll watch it within 2 weeks. It's exciting. It's this sensation, tactile sensation of watching a movie, putting it in the player. I feel like I'm the old curmudgeon at this point, because a lot of people are like, I don't understand this at all. But for me, it just feels like the home theater experience, while streaming to me is just fast food consumable. And I go agree that not everyone's going to agree with that point of view, and more power to them. It's just, it does not appeal to me as something special.
Right. I agree 100%. I think it comes from, you own the Laserdisc player, correct? According to you.
Yeah, very old back in the day. I remember that thing.
Yeah.
Watching Alien and Aliens on it. Some of the best soundtrack that PCM track was back in the day.
Well, you in your Terminator 2 review, you reference that, like, one of the best soundtracks for a Terminator 2 movie. Because
that was the LD. That was a crazy awesome mix.
Yeah. And that was one of the when DVD came out, that was one of the detractors from DVD. It was like, oh, well, it's not as I don't think it was a problem with the DVD format itself. I think it was more of the execution of making those discs, of doing, just like when Blu-ray first came out, when HD DVD came out, it's like the execution of what we were getting wasn't necessarily up to what it becomes, right?
Yeah.
Where Laserdisc,
and not only that, they left less space on the disc for audio tracks in general.
On the DVD.
They allocated different, you know, there's a certain in the format's specifications, like how much is allowed to be allocated for audio, how much is for video. And they skimped on that a little bit, so they just didn't do as many PCM tracks, because those are huge hogs of data. And it was what it was. DVDs were extremely cheap, very easy to, you know, no rewinding, none of that stuff. It changed home cinema for the better.
You didn't have to flip the disc.
But there were problematics in terms of it just didn't have the space they wanted.
Right.
And that's where I think Blu-ray tended to fulfill it. I've always felt that DVD felt like an interim product, as much as it was probably the most mainstream product.
Still is today.
Oh, yeah. To this day, it is. And I think that's mainly because it was the first time people could collect in a very compact format without all of those amenities of menus, no rewinding, all that type of stuff. And for the average layperson, upgrading for just video and audio is, do I have to do this again?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that's why Blu-ray and 4K, in my opinion, have not taken off as much.
Yeah.
DVD just hit at that right time, lightning in a bottle, the right amount of specs that the average consumer said, I'm going to ditch my Laserdisc and my VHS player and go with this.
Right. It. I think DVD hit where people that they never... Laserdisc for people wasn't huge. I mean, I would...
It was very niche.
Oh, I would say it was more niche than 4K is today. Oh, no?
It depends. It really depends.
Really?
I think 4K hasn't even hit into the collector's niche, you know, the audio-video nerds as much as Laserdisc did back in the day.
You think?
Quantity-wise, I think they're pumping them out, but I think there was just more enthusiasm for the format, more rabid collectors. But that's just my perception. Maybe it's warped from years of memory.
Yeah. See, I would go the other direction. I would say there were less people, but it was easily defined as those were your passionate home theater people.
Thank you. That's the best way I was trying to describe it. As like I said, I think there's less discs, less people in there, but they were your, the way to elite, I guess you could probably, they were elitist. Right. The ones who were aimed for that.
Right.
4K just doesn't seem to be that as much that feel.
No, but that's what I mean. I think more 4Ks are sold, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the people that are buying them, it's not necessarily, like you said, like the elite of home theater. It's some people just buy them because some people don't even know the difference between that and a Blu-ray. And they're
or
DVD, right. And they just see it on the shelf and they're like, oh yeah, I'll pick that one up. So whereas Laserdisc,
Then they get home and realize they don't have a 4K player. That is real fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you still have the Blu-ray in there for the most part.
Except for Paramount. Grumble, grumble, whine.
Yeah. But yeah, the Laserdisc was, yeah, it was an elite group. And you knew, we didn't really have the internet to communicate. I mean, we had it, but we weren't talking like we do today.
Yeah.
So when you were out and you'd talk to somebody or go to your Laserdisc store, wherever you could talk to other home theater people.
Oh, and yeah, that was, Tower Records and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. It's going into Suncoast. I remember around here.
Suncoast. I forgot about Suncoast.
Yeah. Go there and you'd scroll through the Laserdiscs. And it's like, you know, a particular movie might be sold out in VHS or whatever. But you go over and be like, oh, yeah, a couple copies here. Grab one. I had a Laserdisc guy. He had his own store. And that's where I learned most of my stuff. As my listeners know, I talk about him all the time. His name's Dave, and he did not like DVD. Everything you just said about PCM, about the audio, he's like, all that stuff that he would be like, it's not the same, it's not this, but he didn't adopt DVD at all. Lost his store because everybody ended up going with, you know, getting away from Laserdisc. I went to a store one day and he was gone. And I don't even know where he is now. I don't know. I wish I could find him, but
Laserdisc was one of those things that you loved for the audio quality, and the special features were bar none, some of the best.
Because we had that in VHS. VHS didn't have special features. You had to rewind the thing. Never mind.
There
special
was something
feature.
Special about Laserdisc, but then again, don't remember. But Laser Rot. Oh my gosh, that was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lost multiple copies of Alien.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think I had to be on my third one before I shifted to the big DVD box set and said enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I had Laserdisc in here. I had it in this house here, and I moved here in 01. I ran Laserdisc for probably another 3 or 4 years. I probably didn't get rid of my Laserdisc player until probably 05.
Yeah, 06. I don't think I got rid of my Laserdisc player, like dead, you know, threw it out type thing till 2010.
Yeah.
Just because I still had it in a box and I would occasionally bring it out for dusting off just to remember something.
Yeah. I kind of want to go back to it right now because I still have most, if not all, of my collection. And I was just pulling out like a bunch of movies that they're in good shape. The covers are in good shape. The discs are in good shape. And I'm looking at them and I'm like, some of them I might frame, just take them and get them matted and framed. But I end up, I was like, I'll just pull a few out. I ended up with like,
part of me just wonders what a Zoomer would think of Laserdisc if you pulled out one of those suckers and said, this is what we used to watch movies on. This like phonograph style record.
Yeah.
Monstrosity. They'd look at you like you were insane.
Well, yeah, that, and if most movies had at least three sides, right? So
two to three.
If you had a like Titanic, I think was four.
Blade
or five.
Runner was pretty big.
Yep.
Titanic was at least four, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But it's been years.
My first Laserdisc player, I had a flip. I had to get up and flip all the sides. Yep. My second one was I got one of the top of the line Pioneers. So same excited.
Here. That thing and cost me $1,000 way back in the day when money actually meant something.
Yeah, when $1,000 was like. Three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you were like, oh, but yeah, I want to say I paid like $1,100 for it.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it didn't play smooth. It still, it did its own little, but you didn't have to get up off the couch.
Yeah.
But there was no, I couldn't afford the one with the buffer in it. Those things I think were like $2,000 or something where you actually.
Yeah, they were pretty pricey. The Pioneer Elites.
Yeah. With the, where it, like you didn't even notice that it flipped sides.
Yep.
But if you had to switch the disc, which meant you had a third side, you still had to get up in the middle of the movie at some point.
Yeah, that was way past my price range back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But that was back in the day when I remember watching a 55 LCD go for $13,000 at Best Buy.
I saw my first plasma that I saw when I bought my, it was in 2001. I was at the Tweeter here in Massachusetts, and I was picking out my Mitsubishi 65-inch rear projection TV, and it was the same one that M. Night Shyamalan had in his theater. And what he had done is he built it into the wall so that it looked like a flat screen TV. So I basically, that's how I designed my theater, and I did the same exact thing.
Yeah. I heard a lot of people on AVS back in the day who would do that, create a false wall to
And you
hide the bulge.
Yep. You hide. I mean, because the way especially with the Mitsubishi, the way the screen kind of popped off, it would literally, the screen was a width of drywall off of like the lower part of the TV itself.
Oh, I remember them. I used to have it wasn't a big one. Yep. It was a 50 inch back in the day, but I remember those things.
Those are still big back then. That was huge, right?
Oh,
My 65, I paid almost $4,000 for the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, whoa. I put that in, and watching that and picking that TV out, anyways, I saw a plasma there, and it was $80,000 for a plasma TV. And then you had to buy the $5,000, like, converter box or whatever. That was $80,000 for the TV. But then there was this box you had to get to put all your content, like to put everything through to get it into the TV. So I was like, $85,000. I remember calling my wife after buying the TV. You know, you ordered it because it was going to be delivered. Yeah. But I was like, I saw a plasma for $80,000. They had it on display, the demo room and everything. I'm like, and I think I want to say it was like 40 inches.
Yeah,
that was it.
It's amazing how things change.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting there going, oh, do I want the 75 or the 85? It's only about $800 difference, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because I'm telling, like you said, 75, 85, then you can get quality. You can pay big bucks and, you know, get high quality for, you know, $10,000, $20,000. You can just get in the door and get yourself a 75-inch TV for like $1,200.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the HDR is usually crap on those $1,200 ones, but
right. But like when people ask like what TV should I get? I'm like, well, what do you have now? What are you starting out with?
Yeah,
and they usually start
what is your budget? What do you want out of the thing?
Yeah, that's
because sometimes you have to tell them, hey, what you want and what your budget? They're two contradictory things.
Right. It's like that's like the guy Rich that I did his theater. And I'm like, you ask what the budget is. And when he finally told me, it was like a couple of conversations we had before I finally found it. He goes, well, he's like $1,000. I go, okay, so 12 to 1500. Like, cause if I can talk you into a little bit more, this is where we are. And that's where we ended up.
And that's the way there is. Usually you're at the cusp of something where like, I know the game can go on forever. If you just add a little bit extra, but usually there's that sweet spot of you're like, you know what? You're 300 shy.
So it's either a non-starter. I can't go over that, which that's a very rare person. But when it comes to TVs, I'll tell people, I'm like, just get the biggest you can get and learn. Because the thing about today is like when my parents bought a TV back in the 60s, it was like you owned that for the next 30 years.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, get the biggest one. Yeah, if that. Get the biggest one you can afford. And then when you start to notice you want improvements here and there, that's how we learned how to upgrade, right?
Yep.
Because if I went out and got you the best TV, you wouldn't even know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
You know, if you could afford it.
There is a certain amount. I went through that whole thing years and years ago. The whole like, well, should I do this? And this is great to me. And then you start looking at all the things, looking at somebody else's TV and going, you know what? I really would like to see those benefits. And then you upgrade to there.
Exactly. But you
sometimes
need to
know there's the buy once, cry once crowd. And then there's the, you got to learn the hard knocks. And I think everyone goes through it to a certain extent. Even if you say buy once, cry once, I'm going to spend this amount of money. And then you realize there is a tier above that.
Exactly. So it never works. Or someday something else comes out that's even better. And now you just spent all that money, but I don't even know if you know, you know, and it especially like when people ask me, I'm trying to feel out, are you a home theater fan or are you just looking for a bargain and you want to get the most bang for your buck?
Or you just want to get the feel of a theater like I've got a big TV and I'm going to watch some pretty colors.
Exactly. And that's the thing.
And there are people that are perfectly happy with that.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
And as an obsessive tech nerd, one of the first things I had to learn was dial it back. Some people may not have the same end results you want.
Right. Yeah, they don't. Yeah, exactly. And they don't care about the knowledge you have. They just
yeah.
Like, they just don't want to make a mistake. They're not really, and that's what I'm getting at. It's like a lot of I get excited. Like one of the things about doing Rich is that he's genuinely into home theater. He's wanted one for years and years and years, and it was exciting to me to be like to have somebody like have a fish on the hook and be like, look, I'm not making money off of this. I'm not doing it. I just want to help people. I want to talk about home theater. Right.
I've done that to so many friends. I'm usually the guy they come to is, all right, Mike, what do I get? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. What do I get? But they just don't want to get something bad and they don't want to make a mistake. They don't really care how great it is. They just don't want something really, really bad. Okay. I can guide you in that direction too. That's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's easy. There's some Samsung 7000Ds or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Just get something that's going to look nice for watching in a lighted room where you just want to watch, you know, whatever TV show on Hulu.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right. So we've established you're a physical media wonk nerd. That's I am too.
I still clutch to my discs like they're, you know, golem in my precious.
Believe me, I have a Zapedi. I love my Zapedi. I put my physical, I back up all my physical media to my Zapedi. And I am eventually someday I want a Kaleidoscape. I think those two items, they give you the best of both worlds because I love to do scenes. I love to sit into my theater and watch something and be like, oh, that scene reminds me of this, and then jump to the next thing.
Oh, I do that all the time. Sometimes I'll spend an evening that I was going to watch a movie jumping from 12 different movies where I'm watching 10 minutes of one scene, 15 of this, five of this one awesome scene that reminded me from the other movie.
Yeah, so much fun. So years and years ago, when the Kaleidoscape first came out, they were $40,000, but I remember that. I love that idea of just
what are they everything. Now?
You can get into them for around six.
That's not too bad.
6,000. No, no. That's why I'm kind of like on the fence. I'm very close to it. And then my daughter went and got engaged. But
oh, then again, there's a money pit going out there.
Yeah. Yes. But the dress is paid for. Good for me.
Do you really need to go to college? Type thing.
Yeah, she already did that, and we're paying for that. It's that's a whole other story. That's delaying the addition for the theater that I'm hoping for. But we have this. My finances are a whole other story. But that's, I love the idea of having all those scenes at your fingertips to just be able to sit there and jump back and forth. But you're 100% right where it's like, I go all the way back. And the reason I mentioned the Laserdisc is one of my favorite days was, I remember on Thursdays, I would go and buy the Laserdisc, drive it home. And it was like seat belted next to me. I was like so excited to get home. And then you said, like, you put that disc in, and whether it's a Laserdisc or like you said, you put the disc into the player, get it seated right. You know a home theater fan when they hold the disc the right way, whether it's a laser disc or a DVD, as opposed to the person that hands it to you, like they're handing you like a 50-cent piece. Like, no.
Oh, dude, I remember back in the day of the CDs, people would do that, and I'd nearly hyperventilate.
Oh, exactly. And it's like, it's so funny. My kids, when they were little, they knew how to do that. People would come over. We weren't even living in this house. My son was born in 97. My daughter was born in 99. We moved here in 01. When people would come over to babysit them in our apartment that we had before here, they could operate the home theater system.
Yeah.
And they would put the Blu-rays in, and they, or not Blu-rays, the DVDs in. Or that, here's the Laserdisc. They knew how to pull them out of the sleeve and not touch them. They could put in a Laserdisc, and all of our babies, my parents and relatives and stuff that would watch our kids would be like, how the hell do they know how to do that? And I go, well, I've heard the horror stories of kids putting a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the VCR. And I was like, no, I'm just going to teach
happening.
Them.
Not happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not happening. I'm going to teach them how to do it. And that's how they were brought up. That's what they knew how to do. So at 2 and 3, you know, 3 and 5, 4 years old, they knew what they were doing. And, but yeah, that it's that process. And that's part of the experience. And that's part of the fun of the movie. But then you get into the whole quality. it eliminates all of those things we were talking about with streaming.
Oh yeah.
There's so many variables with streaming. That's all eliminated with physical.
Yeah.
So now let's get into what are some of your favorite discs and then some of your favorite scenes. We'll wrap this whole thing up with that, because that's what this podcast is about. Mm. Plus great conversations. But
favorite discs, like recently, Dune. Holy cow. Yes.
Oh.
The 4K on that thing was unbelievable. I remember just sitting there in the middle of the movie and saying to myself, Disney, this is how you do an Atmos track.
Yes. Yeah. Poor Disney.
Atmos tracks, as I like to call them.
Yes. Yeah. Disney,
I'm not trying to rag on them, but I don't understand what they're doing.
Well, I think it's twofold. One, they're doing something wrong, I think. And two, the reason it sticks out is because they're doing it to stuff we love.
Yeah.
They're doing it to if they were just doing this to like kids movies, we wouldn't care. Right.
Yeah. And not like, only that, you also have comparisons of older yes. tracks to compare to, for example, Iron Man.
The
DTS HDMA track was insane. The Atmos track is a downgrade.
Yes. Yep.
It's like if they were new mixes, like saying this is how a new movie, this is how we decided to do it. I'm like, all right, not my cup of tea, but they do what they do. But you mixed it this way before.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I loved the Iron Man track. I loved it. But I love the picture quality of the 4K. But at the same time, the downgrade, it's not like what they did with my go-to Ragnarok. I don't know nobody knows what the hell happened. Why did they do that? Because it's such an amazing soundtrack.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's just not dynamic.
No, it is not. It's very flat.
Yeah, there's so much more that could be added to that track. And that's what I get into. Like, I'm like, they're doing it to stuff we absolutely love and that are dying. We're dying to see this stuff. I've had a conspiracy theory for years that I think they're doing it on purpose because they are going to go to, like, they're going to re-release all of this in IMAX Enhanced.
They possibly
come out with a DTS:X for everything.
My suspicion is they're just so focused on streaming, they don't care anymore.
Yeah, but you would still want a dynamic track for streaming, even though you're going to compress it. Wouldn't you want more dynamic?
I know I would, but I just, like I said, it's just one of those things that boggles my mind because I'm just like, why?
I know. And like I said, because we love it.
Oh, yeah.
And it bothers us. So anyways, so some of your favorite discs. Yes, Dune. What I was going to say to Dune is, I don't think I've even said this yet. Is that the next disc that we would, well, I do like No Time to Die as well. But what I was going
to say was a good disc.
Good disc for video and audio.
I'm going to go off screen and pull it up for a second. Go ahead.
But then what I was going to say is when the Lord of the Rings trilogy came out in 4K. Yes. That one was such a shocker. It was so good. And it's just like, I think the next one for me, it was Dune, because that made me go, okay, this is the reference disc to go by of like, can you do this? Cause like some of those scenes in Dune, and I bought it in 3D as well. Yeah. And the 3D looks really nice too. Especially when they have the spice in the air.
Yeah. It's I just haven't had a 3D display in so long that it's been like,
It looks good, but in 4K, that spice still looks really good, and that's when it really shines. See what
Alita Battle Angel was another really good one.
Yes, Alita Battle Angel in 3D. Did you see that?
Yes, I saw both 3D and 4K. That was the last time I had a 3D display. Yeah. It was my RS46 would be when I got rid of it that same 6 month period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and yeah, that was a good looking 3D and just good disc in general. The 4K disc was phenomenal.
Yes, Alita Battle Angel, and another good 3D 4K I really like is Ready Player One.
Yes, the 3D one, that was a good track. I don't remember the 4K that much because it's been a few years, but I remember it was pretty good.
Yes, I that's one of the ones I just had a listener ask me a couple of weeks ago. Since I added the Lumigen, how does it compare to the 3D now? How does 4K compare? And it does. The Lumigen pulls that 4K closer to that 3D feel. And really, actually, it makes it close enough that when I answered the question, I'm like, I don't know which I prefer. They're so close. I'm like, how's that for being on the fence? But I, honestly, for ease of use, it's 4K. It's right there. You don't have to put on glasses. You don't have to sync them up. And you're usually getting the better audio track.
Yeah, usually.
There is a, what is it? The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie that actually has an Atmos track on their 3D disc.
Yeah, that was the second one, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was in 2015. Was it the 2015 one? Something like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, so that's a recent one. Dune, you really like. Any other favorite discs? What are some of your older favorite discs off the top of your head?
Older favorite discs? Oh, shoot. I can see it in my mind's eye. Pacific Rim.
Oh, okay.
The 3D and the regular version of that was just a color bomb. I remember it was one of the most beautiful discs I'd ever seen on the old JVC.
Nice.
As I like to call it, the best awful movie ever created. I remember that disc specifically because I was having a really bad year with new releases going, what garbage are they releasing type? You know, like I'm feeling like this old, jaded, cynical, put rock salt in my shotgun and tell kids to get off my yard type of thing. And finally, this thing, and they just put this big, huge smile on my face the whole movie where I was nerding out going, I love this movie. Need to buy it now.
You know what movie that kind of reminds me of, too, is another one that for sound that I had so much fun with. But every time I watch it, and I've watched it multiple times, and it's kind of embarrassing to say that I do, and I own it, of course, Battleship.
I know exactly what you're talking. I hate to say I like that movie, but it is garbagey fun.
It is, and it's like, it's the acting in it is so overacted, and it's so...
Oh, yeah.
But they have such great... It has a really nice soundtrack to that. It's deep bass. It just... That was one of those movies. I don't even know how old that movie is now, but I can't remember the year. But it was so dynamic that even when you had a lesser system, which I did then compared to what I have now, that it was just so much fun and things moved around the room and the bass was fantastic. And it's like I didn't have the subs that I have now, but it's one that I really like to go to and have fun with. And it's,
wow, that was 2012, 10 years ago too. Jeez,
that's it. Ugh. I feel like that one, was older than that.
I know. It felt older than even Looper for some reason. Yeah. It just felt old. I'm a huge Guilty Pleasure fan. So, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
That, so, and of course, the Matrix 4K was another phenomenal redone.
Yes. Oh.
Although the Blu-ray they included on that was just god awful in the combo.
Oh,
pack.
Was it?
They took the new master for it and just downscaled it. But they also had problems with the colors, and they had problems with pixelation. It was looked compressed to all get out.
Oh, wow.
I threw the disc away and put my old Blu-ray in the slot because it was that painful to watch.
Yeah, that was one that one of the first movies I watched when I got the Lumigen because you got so much more. You got color correct. There's so much more that my projector can do. And then I'm seeing on a giant screen, like the opening scene with the numbers coming down and everything.
Yeah.
And you see that there's numbers behind those numbers and they're little things that I couldn't make out before. It just wasn't possible. And now you're just like, whoa. That movie, that one was amazing. Another guilty pleasure, fun one that I did review, Need for Speed. Have you seen that one?
Oh, yeah, the Blu-ray.
That's
that.
In a Blu-ray.
I was just sitting there going, wait. Oh, yeah, the one with Aaron Paul.
Yeah.
And that movie was pure trash, but it was so goofy fun.
Oh, the Mustang that they used in that thing. And that the scene when they unveil the Mustang with the... I want that movie in 4K. The HDR on that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of movies I really want in 4K.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Shoot, I was trying to... Oh, off the top of my head. Now you just... called me on the floor and I can't remember off, and I'm like mind blank.
Come on. But yeah, like, but True Lies, Abyss. Oh, I mean, we had
True Lies. Thank you, God. We've all been wanting that on Blu-ray for how many years?
I know.
And True Lies is one of my favorite Arnie movies. I am a rabid Arnie fan. Like, I grew up in the 80s watching, you know, Van Damme and Van Damme, you know, double the Van Damage nights on TNT, stuff like that.
Time Cop.
Yeah. I would love Time Cop in 4K too.
I know. That has some really nice scenes.
Cyborg would be insanely look on it's got a very gritty look, but it would look great.
We got Universal Soldier, but
it was okay.
It was okay. Yeah.
But then again, most of the Lionsgate catalog titles don't exactly 4K look great.
Yeah. But it's better than what it was.
Yeah.
You know, similar to Terminator 2.
Which... I was also surprised at how good the new 4K of Escape from LA looked.
I haven't seen that one yet. Look good?
It should have come out, 2 days ago? But yeah, it looks really good. Their only problem is Paramount's having to recall the disc because there's an audio glitch on there.
Oh, no. What happened?
Ralph Potts caught it first, and then I caught it. There's bleed through for the vocals into the surrounds.
Oh, no.
You can actually, if you turn off your surrounds, you can hear the dialogue coming through the surrounds. I mean, if you turn the mains
turn the mains?
You can hear it coming through there. I thought at first it was just because I live, like I said, I have a smaller home theater room at this house. I was like, I thought it was just an echo or something. It's not huge. But then once he, you know, mentioned it, I started, I'm like, okay, I'm going to check that. You can't unhear it after that.
Oh, good for him.
Supposedly they're doing another, you know, replacement program. And if you get the yellow UPC, that means you've got the new one.
Yeah.
That type thing.
What was the one? Didn't they had an issue with the Japanese animation one, Akira. Didn't that one supposed to come out with?
I remember hearing something about that, but I don't remember because I didn't get it to review or anything, so I didn't.
Jeff from HD Report told me about it. He was like, "Yeah, you had to send the disc back, or they sent you another disc. I think it was because it didn't have. It was supposed to be Atmos, but it wasn't, or something like that.
I think I vaguely heard something about that. I just didn't pay attention.
Yeah. I like that movie too.
I grew up on Akira. That was kind of one of those classic
Ghost in the
80s
Shell,
kids, you know,
Akira.
90s watched. Yeah. Go, yeah, Ghost in the Shell. I've watched that movie so many times. I can pretty much.
Yeah, the original, not the Scarlett Johansson one.
What movie?
Yeah, exactly. Did you ever see, speaking of anime, did you ever see Vampire Hunter D?
D? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bloodlust?
Yep. I have both DVDs. I love that movie.
Yeah, I'm a huge anime fan going back into the 80s, so I have everything from Voltron, Rurouni Kenshin, Hellsing, the original, as well as the remakes.
Yep.
I have ridiculous amounts of anime because my wife is an anime collector, so we have a wall devoted to it.
Nice. I one of the first things I kept shopping for it, trying to find it on physical was super expensive, but I ended up getting it digitally. I bought it, I think, off of iTunes many years ago, and I think it's out on another platform now, but Star Blazers.
Oh, God, Star Blazers. I remember that.
Yeah, I loved that show. I loved that show growing up. And then you put it on now, and it's like, it was funny. It was a half-hour show when we were kids, and then you see it now, and it's like, I think it's like 3 2-hour movies or something like that it was originally, and then they broke it up for American television. Yeah, loved that. But yeah, all the stuff that we watched on TV, I have VHS stuff of it, like Guy King and Grandizer and all those different.
Oh God, yeah, that brings back memories.
Yeah, all those robots that would turn into something else while the guy was sitting in the
all
head.
All the mecha shows. Yep.
That, yeah. Oh, loved all that stuff. Loved all that stuff. That's awesome. That's funny. Look at that. You're younger than me, but you still got into all of that stuff.
I had older brothers who introduced me to all this stuff. I had older brothers who decided to scar me by turning me into a horror fanatic. So they would show me all the skin. I'm the rabid horror fan who's like, sweet, how many kids are we going to kill on screen today? You know, how many stupid teenagers get hacked off by, you know, Jason type thing?
I'm not a big horror fan. I mean, I enjoy it. My wife likes horror, but she's not like, I got to go see this next horror movie. Yeah. But she does like horror movies. She likes the experience of being scared.
Yeah.
My thing has always been, you know, I went to school for art, and my mind is always about realism, right? Realistic stuff. I like to draw stuff to make it look as real as possible. So that's where my mind usually goes. And when I'm watching a horror movie, I just know this isn't real.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm watching more of a horror movie for... like, wow, that was pretty cool how they made that look real, but I know it's not real, so I'm not scared. And it's like, and then as you get older, you start to know like the tropes, and you're like, okay, here we go. You know, they're making commercials out of it now,
which is kind of why I love Cabin in the Woods, because it was a complete love letter slash, mocking, you know, the tropes of every horror movie that's ever made.
Right, and that's what. But see, like or growing up, everybody loved like, you know, Halloween and Friday the 13th.
Yep,
I was always a Nightmare on Elm Street fan. Because I felt like that was a departure, or at the time it was something new, right?
A little psychological to the slasher format.
Correct. And it was a little bit more, it was closer to like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right? It was basically that, but in a real horror, like slasher film.
Yeah.
Because it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers was Don't Go to Sleep. So they took and made Nightmare on Elm Street, and it's like, he'll get you in your dreams. You know, and
Johnny Depp's one of his first movies, or it was his first movie. I cannot remember.
Yeah, I think it was his first movie. Something like,
it was like either his first movie or like his first starring movie, if you know what I mean.
Right.
One of those things. But yeah, little fun tidbit. The shirt that Rose McGowan's character wears in Scream is actually the same t-shirt that he wears in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah. See, that's another one that I really liked. I loved Scream because I don't know why. I just felt like it was, more fun. It was a different take on the slasher film.
It was a pop culture winking and nodding at slasher
at everything.
I mean, it was obvious.
Right. Exactly. And that to me was more. For me, a horror movie is more of like, I need something that's a little bit more involved than just like, you know, I'm going to run away. And even though like this guy is just walking, he still catches me. I just need, you know.
The classic, how do you get away from the killer in a horror movie? Run faster than 5 miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Because he just, you know, meanders across the lawn, but still catches you somehow and has super strength and whatever. But another one I liked was, do you remember April Fools?
It's not coming to mind.
So that one's spoilers. It's in the title. The entire movie, it comes off as like a horror movie, and like kids, they go out to a house for a weekend, and they're all like, you know, teenage kids and teenage
Are we talking
stuff.
The old April Fool's Day?
Is
or April Fool's? Because there is an April Fool's Day, the old, was it 1986?
Yeah. So is April Fool's Day? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I believe we're talking about. Yeah, they invite the college girl invites her college friends to her parents' island home.
Island. Yep.
Yep, that's it then. Yeah. I vaguely remember this. I haven't seen this in so many years.
Yeah. It's all a joke. It's not, nothing's going on. So it's like, I liked that because when you saw it, you thought you were going to see a horror movie. But then at the end, you're like, oh, this is all for fun. And it was like, and I that was fun to me. I was like, oh, that was kind of fun. I like that. So that's why it sticks out.
That's kind of why I liked Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a modern twist on that type of thing.
Okay. All right. I didn't
see
those. The
best way of describing that is Mean Girls meets Groundhog Day meets a slasher.
Oh, geez.
It's a guilty pleasure type film, but it's actually pretty fun.
Well, that's the idea of them. They're supposed to be fun.
And I believe Scream Factory is releasing the 4K of both those movies this month.
Oh, nice. Cool. All right. All right. Any of your favorite scenes? What do you like when you fire up your system for the first time? Or you upgrade a piece?
The Matrix Revolutions, that scene where Neo meets the machines and negotiates the truce.
Oh.
And of course, the first Matrix, the classic walk in the lobby scene.
The lobby
scene.
The one
that everyone, you know, wants to watch and rewatch. Yeah. But I love watching that sequence where Neo meets the machines and starts having the truce. It's that massive sonic wave as you hear the machines talking.
Okay.
It is a huge punch in the chest. It's one of those very visceral bass hits, as well as it's very visually stimulating. It's got all the green, the black highlights because Neo's backlit instead of frontlit. And
yeah.
It's a really nifty looking
scene. Now I got to go see that again.
And then, of course, Pacific Rim. I always put in Pacific Rim whenever I'm demoing something or whatever like that.
Yeah, I might be doing that one soon. That's on my list to review, Pacific Rim. That's a great, great soundtrack.
It's just it was.
It's insane. Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping to be doing that one someday soon. Someday soon.
Yeah.
Let me see. What else? Any other scenes?
Hero. The
Hero. The animated one?
No. Jet Li and
Jet Li, okay.
There's one of the beautiful fight scenes in the middle, the Blade fight. It is just incredible to watch, and especially when it got that special edition Blu-ray. I mean, the Blu-ray wasn't that great, but it still looked pretty darn good. And I always loved to demo that scene because it's just so visually beautiful.
So that's
good. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That type of thing.
Okay. All right. So, all of these movies, like I said...
Although Dune is now being edged up in there because it was that good of a deal.
What is?
Dune.
Dune. Yeah.
Yeah, it's now becoming that tier of, okay, I'm just going to start putting that into check, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. It's a reference disc.
It really was.
You look at it and you're like,
it's the scene where they would meet the sandworm for the first time and that the spice trailer's sinking in. That was such an incredibly detailed scene. Every grain of sand, you can see it whipping across his face. The sound in mix of that particular scene was just jaw-dropping.
I hope we could get that with the IMAX enhanced. A disc of it. Because we don't have that IMAX enhanced anywhere right now, right? That's not even on streaming. Have you messed with the IMAX Enhanced on Disney Plus at all?
Not yet. I have not played with it.
No. Okay. It actually is pretty good.
I'll have to play around with it just because I haven't seen anything on there that had it, you know, that I was interested in.
So there's like 13 Marvel movies, and you can when you go to watch it, you can actually pause the movie, back out, put it on regular, and then it'll pick up right from there. So you can do a really good A/B comparison. Gotcha. So you can see what it's like. Obviously, with streaming, the sound is compressed. It's not as dynamic as the disc, but the IMAX enhanced, the IMAX enhanced picture, I think more than makes up for it. It really engages.
I'll have to take a peek at it.
Yeah, definitely take a. I know you love physical and you love that idea, and I do
but
too.
I still delve into them every day streaming. So
yeah, but when you, I want to get these discs. I want to get more IMAX enhanced discs. I want to get these because then you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting all the quality, and you're getting that large IMAX screen. You know, and especially with you on a TV. You know, I know Todd likes his CinemaScope screen that he has, and we go back and forth on that. I'm like, because when you go to IMAX enhanced, your screen gets smaller. I'm like, that's no fun.
Yeah, there are pros and cons to each setup. That's the thing.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the thing. Is that, I mean, I go back and forth myself. CinemaScope, it's like if most of your content is in that way, it's going to be huge.
And I remember the back in the day when everybody who wanted something CinemaScope got an anamorphic lens and went to town on that, masked everything off.
Yep. Yeah, I have, for my screen, I made masks. I wrap them in velvet and pop them in the top and the bottom of the screen. So I get that it's a smaller CinemaScope screen, but on a movie that has variable, like Nolan likes to do as well, you can't have the masking up and it just pops back and forth. So
yeah, when you're watching, I remember that was such a controversial thing back when it first came out, and actually still is to a certain extent.
Yeah,
the switching aspect ratios.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, didn't he first
I'm
do
neutral
it?
To it. I don't mind it. After a while, you just don't notice. Some people, it really drives them nuts. And for people who had anamorphic lenses, it really drove them nuts.
Oh, yeah. Well, because you're setting your whole system up for the wide, and then all of a sudden they go, what the heck? You know, you just need to be set up in a 16:9 screen to really enjoy it, because that when it opens up, it gives you that bigger scene. One of the best ones I'll give you, if you want to check out, is, on Disney Plus anyways, is when, in Black Panther, when T'Challa's first flying into Chadwick Boseman's first flying into, Wakanda. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you see him sitting in the ship. It's at one of the opening scenes of the movie, and he's about to fly into that Mirage type thing, right? That they have up.
And I know what scene you're talking about.
The screen is on him, and it's in a widescreen format, the CinemaScope format. And he says, this never gets old. And then the camera goes to behind the ship and you see the ship flying towards the green foliage, and it's not a jump scene. It actually gradually opens up like it's going in. And it's like, when you watch it, you're seeing Wakanda in full screen, but as it goes in and the foliage opens up, so does your screen gradually open up. It's a really cool effect.
We have to check
effect.
That out. That just sounded like it actually, like, implementation would work there.
Yeah, yeah, it worked really well.
I always felt that some of the biggest downsides to that was just the implementation was too snappy.
Yeah.
There are certain things like screen wipes or something like that where it would open up like that, I think it would be better suited for.
Exactly, exactly. And as a matter of fact, the first time I saw that scene on Disney Plus, I didn't even notice that it did gradually. I had to back it up because I suspected that it did because it felt that way, but I didn't 100% know. And then when I watched it and saw it do it, I go, it did do it that way because it didn't feel like a jump at all. It felt very gradual, and it was. But
I remember it was very jarring on The Dark Knight.
It was. And sometimes I can't remember what movie recently I was watching. I'm not sure if it was Black Widow or something, where it was jarring because it went back and forth a couple of times, like, really quickly. Like, you were like, what the? Like, okay, they're talking here, and it's CinemaScope. And then you go widescreen, full screen. Then you just, it's like, I'm not sure if it was Black Widow. It was something like that. But like you said, I don't mind it for the most part. Sometimes you don't know. But I think The Dark Knight was the first one he did that on, isn't it?
I'm suspicious that you're right. That was the first one I remember.
Yeah. I remember having people over and being like, oh, you got to see this effect. It's pretty cool.
Did Inception have it too?
Probably, knowing him.
I just had this mental image of seeing it that way.
It's with his movies. I don't
think
Dunkirk
been so long.
Have it. I know Tenet had it, but I'm like, did Dunkirk have it?
I'm pretty sure Dunkirk didn't, but I could be wrong. That it's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah. I've been holding off on that one as well. I love Dunkirk.
Dunkirk was a great movie. I'm going to check in my notes and see whether it did or didn't. yeah, it did. It did switch.
Dunkirk did?
Dunkirk did.
Yeah.
I have it listed as having both 2.2 to 1 and 1.78 to 1.
All right, so you have your list there. And obviously, it sounded like you just popped things in. How many movies have you reviewed? Because I scrolled through your 4K all the time, but all of the things you've done write-ups for, your 4K catalog is huge.
Closing in on 2,000?
Wow. Wow. Like I said, everybody, the links are in the show notes.
Drop a couple hundred. There might be drop a couple, because many of these are also stuff that I did back when we were Home Theater Shack as well.
Yeah.
So I remember I did 1,000 reviews over there before we left, and I know I've broken 1,000 here. It's just some of them are duplicates, meaning I've done the Blu-ray and the 4K.
And the 4K.
And others, it's just roughly in that range, around 2K.
Yeah.
Give or take a little.
Your eye must be amazing, because I know, just since I've done this podcast, my eye, my ear, and I've been doing this since 88, and like just messing around with home theater. But then when I started the podcast, and now, like, you're going to go on someplace and you're going to say something, people are going to call you out. So like, you really start to pay attention to stuff, right? And it's one thing to have an opinion when you're in the hobby. It's another thing to tell people, like, this is my opinion. It's my opinion. It's what I say. Yeah. It's what I think. But you start to have, you gain a more critical eye. And
you do. It's like I said, I consider myself a hobbyist reviewer in the sense that I'm not Siskel, I'm not Ebert, I would never went to film school and did, you know, but like Ralph Potts or somebody like Peter over at Why So Blue, etc. We're just rabid film fans who have taken an eye to this stuff and share experiences. But after a while, you do get a critical eye, and it's a blessing and a curse. Blessing, yes. I mean, you do check these things out and you notice it. And then there's a time when you're just watching with your wife and you're starting to like mentally take notes and not enjoying it as much as you could have on date night, because you're sitting there going, you know, that was a bad camera wipe right there. They really should. Oh, and it's that artifacting there in that corner.
Yeah.
Or I have caught myself doing this and I have nearly been beaten to death is in the middle of a date night movie, pausing the movie and going, did you hear that? I think they, you know, did this right here.
Yeah.
And my wife just turns to me with this look of sheer, I'm going to stab you. in the side right now if you don't hit that play button.
Yeah, and it's...
And I'm like, oh, sorry. Put down Critical Eye.
But it's so funny because, like, I'll go to watch a movie when I do one to and I always do the quotation fingers on my reviews because it's not a review in the aspect that you do. I do for, like, the fun scenes that I want to talk about, and then I'll just break down those scenes. But I always try, not try, but I always just watch the movie once through. And I set my everything to reference, like my sound is at reference, everything's set up perfectly. This is the way I do everything. And then what I do on my phone is I'll hit stopwatch when I start the movie. So those two are synced. And then when I get to an area and I think I liked something, I just do a screen grab. So at the end of it, my phone will have all these like 20 to 30 screen grabs of the scenes, right? But at least I don't have to take myself out of the movie. All I do is just like squeeze my phone together to do the screen grab and that's it.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you're experiencing a movie like that, if you pause to write something down or you do something, it takes you out of that full experience. So I try to do that, but now I'm finding like when I actually sit down with my wife to watch a movie and I don't have I'm like, oh, I can just relax. I can just watch. I don't even have to have my phone on me. I'm like, this is great. And did you rub off on your wife though? She's got to have it because my family does. No?
No, she's one of those. She doesn't even have to have the speakers on.
Ooh. No, my wife doesn't have to, but she knows.
Yeah, she knows how to, and she does when she wants to watch something like a Marvel movie or something where it's going to be very cinematic. And I'm like, okay, you know, we'll set it up. But I mean, half the time I walk her in there and she's just watching something. I'm like, why is the receiver off? You know?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't need that. I'm just watching this. I'm just like, okay, I'm too obsessive of a hobbyist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mine's a theater. I come downstairs. We watch TV upstairs and like, I'll ask her, I'm like, hey, do you want to watch this? And she's like, do we have to go downstairs for that? I'm like, no, we can watch it up here. Oh, okay. I'll watch that. Right. Yeah. So I'm like, all right. But my wife, my kids, it's like you go to somebody else's house and they're like, why does that TV look so funny? Or why does it, you know, so they get a little bit of that eye.
Yeah.
But it's not this, they don't have the same, but like you said, it is a curse.
Because it is, because sometimes you can't control it. You're just sitting there and just analyzing it, going, and you're like, wait, I'm just watching this to have fun tonight. I'm not reviewing this.
Right.
Stop it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I mean, I went to school for art, and what they teach you in art school, it's not how to draw. It's how to see.
Yep.
Right? So it's like,
I've heard that by several people who went to art school.
Yeah, and it's because everybody goes like, oh, you're really good. All I'm duplicating is what I'm seeing, especially for me where I want to draw hyper-realistic. So you need to be able to see details and see correct. And it was training for how to see the world, how to see how light works and all of those theory and all of these things. And then to implement all that into this for a hobby. And then what I do for work is I'm a mobile body shop. I paint cars for a living. So now I have a critical eye for paint work on cars. So I see a car and like my buddy brought his car over once and he bought a not brand new. He bought a used car and he pulls it in the driveway and he goes, what do you think? I'm like, oh, nice. It was a Maxima like 2 years old. And he goes, now we're standing probably 15 feet away from it in my driveway. And I'm just looking at it. I'm like, yeah, it's nice. And he goes, can you take a look at it for me and let me know if it's had any body work done on it? I hadn't even moved. I go, you want the truth? And he goes, well, let's go look. I go, I can tell you from here. And he goes, no. I go, yeah. And I'm I go, I can't see the other side of the car, but this whole side of the car has been painted.
Yep.
And he's like, how do you know? And I was like, but you know, there's things, there's
tells. I'm that way with guns. Like someone brings me an AK or something. Yep. Like what has, you know, I don't know if anyone's done anything. I'm like, he's already chopped at the trigger pins and the hammer's changed out. And
yeah. You haven't even touched it yet. You're just,
I don't even know what he's bubbled on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know here, but I'm like, look, and then you go up to it and you go, I'll show you what I see plus more. But I'm like, I'll prove it to you by pointing stuff out. But yeah. And that's part of like who we are. That's why we probably like home theater. It's like that's we have that mind, that eye, that we like to utilize that. We like to utilize it for details, and it's a curse, but it's fun.
The one that really ticks my wife off is, though, because I'm the audio nerd, is I'm sitting there going, something just doesn't sound right. And I bring out the meter, the sound meter, and Rue. And she's just sitting there going, all right, I'm going to come back with a bag of popcorn. And if it's not done by the time I get back, we're shutting it off.
Yeah. It's
because I'm just sitting there going, the bass just sounds anemic in this film. Is there something wrong here? Are we doing this? I've had to train myself to just do that later.
Yeah. And it's. But that
if I want to stay married.
So when do you find yourself doing like I'll do stuff like that and be like, I'll ignore it, and then I'll be laying in bed, and it'll be like 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Where are you going? I'll be right back. You come to bed at like 3 in the morning.
A T. So much time. 4 a.m. I got to be up at 6:30 going, all right, well, this is going to hurt. Double coffee today.
Oh, yeah.
But I've spent 3 hours fine-tuning it and realized there was a null in my room that I have to fix at that point.
Right.
And you've spent moving and doing the subwoofer crawl for 3 extra hours because you thought you had it right.
I thought, I found something. I found that imperfection, or I found, like, why did I have to hear that? And then next thing, you're like, all right, it's going to be a long night. And you try to go to bed, but you're laying there with your eyes closed, and you're like, but what if I do that? All right.
Exactly. You're sitting there going, if I run a sweep in the room, will it find that?
Yeah.
I'm hearing this.
Yeah. It's all problem solving, and it's all, like, it's those details. I remember doing it in, like, 88, 89 in my bedroom in my parents' house, and I'm trying to figure out how I could get connections to work. Like, all right, if I put a Y splitter on this and I run it over to here, and like I'm trying to get as many speakers as possible. And this was back when we had just Dolby surround, but it was the same thing. I'm in my bedroom at 4 o'clock in the morning, ripping apart the back of my theater cabinet and trying to figure out if I can connect this, and boom, you know, that noise is going off. Yeah. And it's like, but yeah, that's what you do. Middle of the night. Got to get it done because it's stuck in your head.
There we go. Sorry, the lighting in thy house is starting to dip.
Oh, sun going down out there?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we're in Arizona right now, so it's getting dark early.
Oh, it's dark here.
Well, for us, you know, a nice cold 70 degrees.
I know, you're... Hey, today it was like 60-something here. But tomorrow's going to be 30. So
yeah, I have family who live out in Iowa and in Kansas, so they're talking about negative degrees, or it was 10 degrees when I picked my son up. I'm going, oh, it was 65 here.
Oh,
and man. They're just like, I hate you.
Yeah, exactly. I love the extreme cold, though. Like, when it gets down into the negatives here, because I like to experience it. I don't want to live like that all the time, but it's fun. It's, you know. Yeah. So.
We also have the opposite. Come summer, it's going to be 117 during some days.
But it's a dry heat.
let's just say that doesn't work so well.
That's what everybody says. It's like,
however, I will still rather live here than in Alabama where it's 100 degrees with 98% humidity.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to live in Florida, and I believe you didn't even dry off after a while. You just kind of squeegeed yourself a little bit and said, this is as dry as I'm going to get.
Yeah. I hate that. I like when you just can't even be outside and stand to be with yourself. I'm like, ugh.
And I have bad allergies to mold or like things that grow in wet environments. So if I go there, I'm going to be taking injections and have every pill and, you know, sniff up the nose just to survive.
No, I was out in kind of your area. I went to Moab a few years ago, mountain biking, and I love the temperatures. I love the dry, like it was really cold in the morning and then it warms. Like we'd start mountain biking at like 5 and by like 10, 11 o'clock, you had a pack, you had to carry a pack to carry all your clothes because of the different changes in temperatures. Because it is so dry, you can't retain any kind of heat. So, loved it.
You get ice cold during the night because of that. It's really weird how you can have a day that hits 85 degrees, yet a 28 to 32 degree night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all that thin air atmosphere just boom, the minute the sun goes down.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean. We'd be all gloved up and everything. I'd still be in shorts, but I'd have multiple layers on top, gloves. And by 8 o'clock, all right, you take the gloves off. But by 10 o'clock, all your all your clothes. You're in just a short sleeve shirt because now it's warm out and it's all in your pack and you have to carry everything. So, all right. This has been a blast.
Yeah, it has.
This is so now, next time. Mm-hmm. So now this is going to be a regular thing, Mike. You have what, 3,000 movies to draw upon? 4,000 movies?
I own about 5,000 Blu-rays and 4K, so.
Okay.
They add up real quick. I used to collect them before the review, but I've been doing this for 10 years, and after a while, you get a stack. And I tend to be a pack rat, to my wife's chagrin. Like, let's say, I still have Dragon Ball Evolution, because I think I may watch it someday.
Yeah. You might. Like that,
torture.
I have all those Laserdiscs sitting there, and I don't even have a Laserdisc player, so. Yep. I know, and I can't get rid of that stuff. Can't get rid of it.
We moved this last year, and I realized how bad it had gotten when I had 15 years bought like boxes, OEM boxes that I thought we might need this in case we have to pack this machine up into it from 15 years ago. Oh. And I'm just going, okay, maybe we should thin the herd a bit.
Yeah. Well, I just in December gave away 4 discs that I found because I own doubles of it and didn't even know.
Oh yeah.
4K discs that I was like, oh, I want to review this or I want to watch this. So I just went, I'm like, I couldn't find it. So I bought it on Amazon. And then I was redoing my shelf of all my discs and putting them in alphabetical order. And I'm like, oh, I got 2 of these. I had like 4 or 5 discs. And then I just found another one that I'll be giving away soon.
Yep, I have a stack of about 40 that I've got to do because I've had duplicates from 4K to blue, et cetera, that I've
got all stacks of
those. All right, I got to get rid of these blues now that nobody wants.
Yeah. I sold a bunch on eBay of Blu-rays that I had duplicates of. Not anything like any collector stuff. Like I have all of my Terminator stuff. Terminators, Terminator 2s, all the versions of Terminator 2. I want those. But then movies.
What, like, a god awful 4K disc that was.
I know. You see, I'm the one that's always like, but it's the best it's ever looked. And then
it's the best it's ever looked, but the part of me that what if? Because knowing all the flaws in the transfer, although there is one that finally beats it. Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah. For bad, you mean.
Unbelievable, awful disc that I just kind of just stared at the screen and just said, I spent money on this? I'm actually ticked.
I didn't buy it. I didn't get it because of that. I read everybody talking about it. I'm like, this thing's got to be god-awful. Because
it is. It really is a downgrade.
What happened? What happened? Oh,
it's hard to describe, but what they dimmed it out, and it's not like the HDR dimming where it has a lower natural brightness level to it. It's dim, it's grungy, it looks smeary at times, it's flat, it looks DNR to me, in my opinion.
Sounds like Reacher. And
it was awful. Like, I actually thought the Blu-ray looked better, even though there were some elements of better resolution.
Right.
You see textural details, but it was a frustrating disc that I just said, Disney did not give a crap on that thing. I've heard some of the sequels were bad, but not that bad.
Mm.
But the whole set was just something I was like, you know what? I'll come back in 5 years and they've done a special edition.
And see, to me, it's like, it doesn't make sense why you would even, like, what happened there? Because 4K is such a niche thing, like we were saying earlier, that you're only putting these things out for people like us, right?
Yeah.
The people that care. I mean, the people that don't care, you can put out a crap disc, but then you might as well just, the idea is you're putting this out for the consumer that really cares about this.
Yeah. So that's been my frustration is I'm like, you look at your audience. Your audience for this particular format is not the audience for DVD or Blu-ray even, you know, partially. It's just you're looking at the niche elitists in a certain sense.
Right.
And you're giving this out? Ow.
Yeah. That's
But the stream wasn't much better. I remember watching the Disney Plus stream going, this isn't that great either.
But at least that's just the stream. And that's going
That's what I took back then. I was like, whatever, it's a Disney Plus stream.
And that's too bad. That's too bad.
Like, I've seen some discs that are like, okay, not that big of an upgrade. And, you know, you'd be, what's the term? Diplomatic about it. All right, it's not the greatest upgrade, but you do understand there was upgrade. Like the Tomb Raider discs. I'm like, okay, these aren't bad. They're not great. But, you know, hey, thumbs up, you know, decent-looking disc. And then there are ones like that. You just sit there and go, for the love of God, Disney, what were you thinking? Type thing.
Yeah.
And that was one of them. Terminator 2, it's weird because Cameron just won't do another master. And he's the one who had that DNR-baked master for years.
Why won't he do one, though? Is it wait? But he's not, like, we were talking earlier.
I'm not sure where there's waiting, but he approved that last transfer. And I don't know why he approved it. There has been so much digital manipulation that it was frustrating.
Now, is it possible that the technology, I mean, he just seems to be overly focused on Avatar right now.
He looks to the future, forget the past, in a sense.
Yeah.
That's kind of his mentality.
The great way to put it, because I'm wondering if that's what he's thinking with, like, Terminator 2
possibly.
And The Abyss and like, True Lies.
I know he's made statements that he really said he wouldn't do True Lies again because, you know, the whole Islamic terrorist thing being not as politically correct today as it is, you know, back then.
Oh.
Like, you know, he's kind of had regrets about that. So I'm wondering whether that plays into it. But that still ticks me off because True Lies is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. It's a fun movie. It's just that entire...
It's kind of like Face Off in the sense that it's that hilariously awesome, guilty pleasure, check your brain at the door action movie that just lightning in a bottle is perfect.
Yeah. And it has everything where the dynamic between Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis... But then Bill Paxton's the dynamic between Schwarzenegger, Bill Paxton, and what's his name? Roseanne Barr's ex-husband.
John. Yeah,
the comedian there.
Yeah. Wow, I can literally see him in my face.
I
owns
love him.
Vodka. I know he has that vodka company, and he's kind of crazy.
Oh, does he?
Dan Aykroyd.
No, not Dan Aykroyd.
So wait, you're right, not Dan Aykroyd. This is going to drive me absolutely nuts.
This is one of my favorite parts of the podcast because I know when I do stuff like that, the listeners are yelling at us.
Yeah, they're probably sitting there screaming, going, insert name, dummy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can see his face, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, like I said, I know it's Roseanne Barr's ex-husband.
And, yeah.
It's on the tip of my
tongue. Tom Arnold. Good night.
Tom Arnold. There you go.
I feel like an idiot for missing that, but yeah.
No.
And, of course, a baby Eliza Dushku.
Yes. I know, just a little kid on the end of a Harrier jet.
Back before she got Buffy famous. And
yeah, that movie is, it's so much fun. But like I said, the dynamic there, the comedy that goes on with Tom Arnold, and that's, I thought that was kind of fun, that was an added element that was missing from some of the other action films of that time.
Yeah.
That I mean, obviously we had the one-liners and stuff like that. Like, you know,
Arnie one-liners are kind of legendary. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because in your, it had to be your T2 review where you said that's like the one-liners that came from there and you listed the I'll be back. And I was like, wait a minute. That was actually in the first one, but it's not considered a duplicate one-liner when now we're getting into... Because when he said it in the first one, I don't think... He didn't have any corny lines.
No, it wasn't a one-liner. That was almost a horror movie in the way it's horror sci-fi. It was a hard sci-fi movie versus the comedic nature that came with the second one. And you're right. It did come in the first one, but I was like, it was iconicized through the second one, in my opinion.
Exactly. It's like, I mean, we had used it and been like, I'll be back. And then, but then him using it again later on, I'm a little different than you on how, like, you said that those two movies are like wildly different or something. And I'm like, I think the way I watch those two movies, I feel like it's almost like Cameron decided to, I agree with you where you said he ramps everything up in the second one.
Yeah, like I said, I always think it's Alien versus Aliens, Terminator versus Terminator 2. That same differing spectrum. Yes.
But I felt like it's like almost the exact same story, but now we just we've got a bigger budget, we've got more stuff to show you, we've got we added another Terminator, we did all this, but it's the exact same story. It's like you have the quote love story going on, but now it's her and the Terminator, but it's the exact same story if you plot it out on paper without
It's classic sequelitis. Do the same things as the original, just amp it up.
just do it a lot better.
Except it actually did it better, unlike 48 hours versus 48 hours later, which hurt.
Another 48 hours, yeah.
Another 48 hours, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that one wasn't as good. But
they did the same thing. Amped, do the same story, just amped to level 10.
Right. But what I do agree with you on is that I do prefer the first one as a pure movie. I think there's a lot of nuance to that that I absolutely love. I just reviewed that one a few weeks ago, too.
And I love Michael Biehn, so.
Yeah, Michael Biehn. He got cut out of most of the second one, unless you get the, unless you watch the extra,
the ultimate extended version or whatever. Yeah,
but he was, I remember that he was supposed to be in it. And when that movie came out, I saw that in the theater. Still remember going with my, well, girlfriend, my wife now, but at the time. And I had read the book ahead of time for Terminator 2. Completely ruined the movie for me because the book is basically all of the, you know, the extended cuts of where they operate on his head and they break the chip and they don't, or they want to break the chip. And all of that leads into his mannerisms, the rest of the movie, all of that is in the book. And none of that, the first time I saw the movie and I was like, what happened? All the best parts are gone.
Yep. And you can tell they wanted to put him in. That's where all this extended edition stuff came. But it just, it impacts the flow a little bit. And some people didn't like it.
Yeah. And that was what was so great about having the Laserdisc.
Yes.
You could get that. And that was the first time. I was like, oh, finally, I get to see it. So, cool stuff. So, what's a couple movies you'd like to review, have some fun with, and go over some scenes? We'll do the old Brightside home theater treatment to one of your favorite movies the future.
I'm trying to think. The Matrix is a classic one. I mean, as I said before, The Matrix is just one of those iconic ones that changed film history. And I love scene piecing that movie.
All right.
Shoot.
We could do that. We can do whatever you want to do.
Man, I'm going to have to think about that. Because there are just, you know, so many different... I'm one of those people that people ask, what's your favorite movie? I'm like, all right, do you have pen and paper? We're going to go down about 30 of these right now.
Yeah. Well, hey, I don't know how long the podcast is going to be going, but we can do a bunch. I love doing this. And it's... Like when I sat down to do this podcast, I'm like, I kind of had an idea on what I wanted to do. But now that I'm getting into talking to more people like yourself, it's like, I love getting a back and forth where you can talk about the scenes and like, what did you see in this movie? And what did I see?
It's so sorry, my cat's trying to join the podcast.
That's okay.
So that means it's dinner time.
There you go. So, all right, I'll let you go feed your cat. I got to go eat too. I haven't eaten yet myself. So,
but, all right,
Mike. Thank you so much, everybody. Mike from AV Nirvana. Check him out there. All the links are in the show notes. Like I said, the library is extensive. I mean, fantastic job what you're doing over there. I love reading all your stuff.
Thank you very much.
No, really, I didn't say this enough, but I love how the way you write it for, you're seeing it from a, like you said, a fan's perspective.
Yeah.
And you're giving both a review of the movie as well as that home theater experience and stuff. And it's a lot of fun to read. So when movies are coming out and I click on them and I'm like, all right. And then I won't say what, but there's been a few I've avoided because of you. So.
And that's always the fun thing that, you know, I always like to say that a reviewer is a barometer, never a take their word for it.
Yeah. If it's a big movie that I love, I won't read it. I won't read your stuff because I don't want you to skew my opinion. Because I've read, I learned that years ago that I would read about, I got so excited about a movie coming out and I wanted to see some of the best scenes. So I'd read a review and I couldn't wait to see those scenes. And they might say it wasn't good. Like the track wasn't good or this wasn't good. Now my mind is thinking it's not good. And an example is Spider-Man Far From Home. I actually enjoyed that. I thought the track was really good. I thought it was pretty dynamic. And then I started reading reviews and people didn't like it. And I'm like,
which one? Oh, man. No Way Home or Far From Home?
Far From Home. The middle one.
Okay. The middle one. Gotcha.
The one middle one. Mysterio. Mysterio. Yeah.
I heard the same thing. I actually enjoyed that movie. I didn't think it was as bad as people let it on. At least in my opinion.
Right. And that's why I think if I had read that before I watched it at home again, you know, after seeing it in the theaters, if I had read that before I experienced it myself, I might have had that in my head and go, oh, yeah, I see it. It's a little flat. But I experienced it myself, and that you know, so I do stuff like on the bigger movies that I know I'm going to, I love the movie. I'll just wait and then I'll read, see if you and I agree or something like that after the fact. But
yeah, yeah. I love that movie mostly because I love Jake Gyllenhaal and Nightcrawler is one of my favorite films.
Yes. Yep. Good stuff. Good stuff.
I think the only one that I actually, I remember one that bit me in the tail. Like usually I can read reviews and be like, all right, I'll see how it is. And I end up really loving something that they hated. The Last Jedi. I'm going to be one of those people that loathes that movie with a living passion. I remember reading the reviews going, no way is it this bad. Went in, and within 15 minutes, I'm going, yep, it's this bad.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're going to have to throw down.
Now, by the way, that's going to be one of those ones that will either get me people agreeing with me, or I'll be crucified, because right. There is no middle ground with that movie.
Well, it's funny. I've found talking to people, there are people that love that movie, but then they don't like The Rise of Skywalker. And then in reverse, you can't like both. It's kind of like geometry and algebra.
It's weird. Like I said, my breakdown of the trilogy is the first one was a repetition. The Force Awakens was a repetition of Episode 4, you know, playing it safe, but had potential. The second one left me going, oh my gosh, please don't do this. Ryan, go, please leave. And then the third one was a giant retcon because they were desperately trying to pander to the fans to roll back the bad will that had been created. And it was a mess in its own right, but it was still fun, but it was a mess. I still feel that trilogy just did not... The best way of describing it, it did not convince me that it had a reason to exist.
Okay. Yeah.
At the same time, I'm not one of those people who says it has to be the original trilogy because I love The Mandalorian, Clone Wars, Rebels.
Yeah.
Even enjoyed heavily Rogue One. It's just, it's hard to describe why it didn't feel right to me.
See, what my thing is when I talk to somebody like yourself, I think what it is.
Oh, you're one of those people.
Yes, exactly. No, what I think it is like when we saw the original trilogy, 70, you know, Star Wars, Empire, Jedi, when we were kids, everybody, like even yourself who, you know, you grew up after that, but you
burned the VHSs into the ground.
Correct. So like the first time you saw them, you were a kid. You experienced all these things as a kid. Mm-hmm. Now we're older. And we're not experiencing them. We're being critical. And we're looking at like, why can't it be like when we were a kid? Well, ignorance is bliss. When you're a kid, you were just petrified of Darth Vader. I just had this conversation the other day. You're petrified of Darth Vader.
He is one of my top three villains.
Exactly.
He is one of the... Him, Scorpius from Farscape, and Michael Myers are probably the top three villains, in my opinion.
Yeah. And one of my listeners wrote in and he was like, Vader, excuse me, was like this badass villain. But then when you get older and you rewatch it, you're like, he didn't really do anything. It wasn't until Rogue One where we saw true Vader.
Yeah.
Right?
I will admit that last scene was a nerd moment, me giggling like a little child to see Vader actually scary for the first time in years.
Right. Really the first time ever.
Yeah.
Because what it was is when you were a kid, that's how you saw him.
It was all intimation back then.
Exactly. Which is fantastic storytelling. But the Rogue One Vader that we saw at that end scene, that was being actualized for your adult mind on what it is.
I mean, right? I understand it was pure fan service, but it did make him, you're like, okay, this is a full force powered user in his a scene from the ideas of terrified, you know, civvies.
Yeah.
You know, they were just normies.
Oh, yeah. It's. But that's when you get into like the latest trilogy and you get into the breakdown of all those movies, we're breaking down it with an adult brain, trying to recapture our youth.
I still remember being 18 going to see Episode 1. I walked from school to go buy pre-order tickets. 5 miles one way, 5 miles the back.
Well, that's the way the math works, eh, Mike? It would have been weird if it was a different number in each direction.
I just remember coming back to school after our hour and a half lunch break, gasping for air, got tickets in my hand for me and my girlfriend.
Oh, that's, yeah. I was a little older.
Dating myself there. I was 18 exactly when it came out.
Yep, I was 29. Yep. And that was a big deal. That was huge because
we didn't think it was ever going to come back. Nobody would have bought it.
We didn't know. I mean, we did know in the 80s, we had heard rumors that there were 9 movies planned.
Or at the very least, he had scripted out the ideas for 9 movies, and there was theoretical.
And we knew that those were the middle 3. We did hear that through the wherever. It wasn't online, obviously, but we did hear that.
I remember the rumors service. That the Timothy Zahn books were rumored to be 7, 8, 9, and everyone was hoping for that. And then it shifted years later. And
so when they finally announced that we were getting more, you were like, oh my God. And it feels like it was a lifetime, but it was what, 13 years? 15 years, something like that. That's it between Jedi and then the next one.
83 to 2000. So yeah, 17 years.
So yeah. Yeah. So it's, I mean, it feels like it was forever.
Yeah. It feels like, because
it's been longer
to my kids' mind, it was before I was born type thing, or for 1 year later for Jedi. I was only 1 year old when that came out. So yeah. So it was like one of those, something that existed before I was born and now I'm going to see it come back type thing.
So that literally is a lifetime for you.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, that is a lifetime, but that's what I mean. But it's actually been longer since it came out than the space in between them.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and it's, was there actually more time between that trilogy and the latest trilogy? I think there was. I think that was one of the little things too.
No, it couldn't have been because they were 2 or 3 years apart for each. So 2000, 2003, 2006 era. For Return of the, and then it came out in 2015 was The Force Awakens.
So that was
about 9 years.
Yeah, 10 years.
At least I think it was like 2006.
I think the original trilogy were 3 years apart. I think the first trilogy was, well, not the first trilogy, but the origin story trilogy was.
So 2005, it was 10 years exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think those were each 2 years apart.
Yeah, that makes more sense. 2000, right. 2003, then 2005 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
In that range.
In that range. I thought it was something like that. All right. It's over 2 hours there, buddy.
Oh, wow. It's been a while.
Hasn't it? Time flies. Time flies when you're having fun. Thank you. All the links, you can find him in the show notes. Find him on Twitter. I'll have all of that in the show notes. Mike, thank you so much. Can't wait to get back at it. Awesome. Thank you.
All right, man. Have a good night, DJ.
Was I wrong? Oh, my. Physical, digital, it is. It's part of, it's putting the disc in. He wasn't lying. I love that part, too. I one thing I didn't mention in there, I still can smell my Laserdisc. They have a specific smell. That's part of the experience. When I open up the box that they're in, I'm just like, oh, it takes me back to when I used to load those discs in, those giant discs. Talking lazy. I had so much fun. Thank you, Mike. Thank you to everybody for watching, listening. If you like what you saw, hit subscribe on YouTube, on your favorite podcast platform. Really appreciate it. That's how we grow this podcast. You can also support me on Patreon at patreon.com/brightsidehometheater. Monthly donate, sign up for a monthly donation or don't. Either way is fine. We're going to keep this thing going. Next week, I'm going to have a movie. On Tuesday, I'll be talking about all of your questions and comments. Anything that we said today, let me know. We'll be talking. Actually, I'm recording on Sunday morning. So get your comments in as soon as you can so we can talk about them. You can hear those on Sunday. I got a great guest lined up for next Tuesday's podcast. Can't wait for you guys to hear that. Big step for Brightside Home Theater this coming Tuesday and my audio-only podcast. So, everybody have a great weekend. I'll talk to yous on Tuesday. And, hey, go push play. Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.